1926. Explosives begin in Curtis Bay. 1943. 10 workers die in explosions in Curtis Bay. 1977. Outbreak of rare cancer looms over workers in Fairfield. A small community, and a region in, you guessed it, Curtis Bay. 1984, a chemical blast rocks Fairfield, 14 persons treated for effects of fumes. In the 1990s, all residents of Fairfield and Wagner's Point are displaced, forced to leave because all of the toxic industry and pollution that had to consume the neighborhood had destroyed their lives, their health, and extracted them from their homes. 2009, the plan to build the nation's largest trash burning incinerator in Fairfield, less than a mile away from my high school. My name is Destiny Wofford, and I was born in Curtis Bay, born into a fight for my life. I was born in Curtis Bay where I was facing the suffering and crushing weight of poverty on a daily basis, where I was forced to breathe in toxic air like perfume, where I had inherited this history that I mentioned of this legacy of our communities being treated as dumping grounds, of our basic human rights being ignored, and our lives being sacrificed. These injustices, this history that has shaped my community, have been made invisible. These injustices that exist and persist in my neighborhood are hidden by the blending into everyday reality. It becomes normal, a part of the ordinary. It's considered, or it's not a lesson that is taught to us in schools. The health concerns that me and my neighbors and my families are suffering from living in Curtis Bay, from having that history, is not something that my doctors warned me of. These narratives, these stories of the people that lived in Fairfield and Wagner's Point, of the people like me that live in Curtis Bay, were not ones that were being told in the media. And yet, despite this, people came together to fight around an issue that caused them harm. My friends, our supporters, managed a fight and won in a 4-year struggle to stop the nation's largest trash burning incinerator from being built less than a mile away from my school. An opponent that did its absolute best to blend in with the status quo and made it so that anyone that challenged it seemed uninformed or stupid or outright crazy. It was a development that had embedded itself, like the injustices that we faced, into the systems and the structures and into this ordinary perspective that we had been living through in our communities. So how do you fight something that you can't even see? How do you fight something that's invisible, that's embedded into the structures that we rely on to keep our society going? That's the story that I want to tell tonight. No one in the community knew that the project even existed, the incinerator. It was treated as this gift from the gods by our mayor and our governor. It was said to be the solution to our waste and energy crisis. Mind you, this was the very same incinerator in development that would have been burning 4,000 tons of trash every day, that was permitted to release 240 pounds of mercury every year and 1,000 pounds of lead. All of this in a community where, just because we live there, we're more likely to die of lung cancer and respiratory disease and to suffer from asthma. No one in the community knew that the project even existed. And when we were learning about the incinerator, we meaning a group of friends and I and our neighbors, were just high school students, and we really questioned if there was anything that we could do to truly make a difference. But we knew that we had to do something, that we couldn't idly stand by while their incinerator was constructed. So we hit the streets, and we reached out to our neighbors, and we told the story about the incinerator and about the facts that we were learning. I remember this particular experience during one of my first times canvassing, when I was walking up to this door. It was really cold around winter, and I was walking up to this door, and I knocked on it. And I don't know if anyone here has ever canvassed before, but you can't really be sure what to expect. So you could be treated with exciting conversations and just kindness all around, or with the door slammed in your face. But on this particular day, on this particular moment, an old man answered the door. And I told him about the incinerator, and I told him about the facts, and about our efforts to stop it. And his response to that was, "The work that you kids are doing is pointless. That Curtis Bay is and always will be a dumping ground. And nothing that we did would ever change that reality." Needless to say, this took us off guard and frankly really pissed us off. Here we were, a group of high school students that had spent a year researching and reaching out to as many people as we could and doing our hardest and everything that we had, that we were capable of, to stop this incinerator, and that was the response. So we spent a lot of time thinking about that moment, about its significance. And what we came to realize and understand was that the man's response was so much more deep and complex than a simple, "I'm not interested." In fact, it was a result of this long history, of the consequence of this long history of people being excluded and dehumanized, and their human rights being violated, and their health and the sanctity of their lives being ignored. It became his mentality, or as we call it in the group, the dumping ground mentality, became what moved us and helped us to understand more about our struggle to stop the incinerator. He held this mentality of, there was nothing that we could do. It was a sort of passive acceptance of the status quo. And in fact, allowed this invisible opponent that we were facing on a daily basis showed its power. And we would recognize in that moment, in analyzing it, that it wasn't enough to just recite facts or just to know the actual facts of what the incinerator would be doing or the legality issues. We would learn that we had to change hearts and minds if we were ever to change, to stop the incinerator. But we would learn that changing the fate of our community and changing these hearts and minds is really, really hard. Because how do you even begin to change the mentality and the perspectives of people who have suffered through this for generations? Like I said, we were high school students, right? So we weren't lawyers or lobbyists or politicians. And we had to rely on the skills that we really had as students, as human beings. And the truth is, we were artists, you know? We were poets and we were writers and we were musicians. And so art is really powerful and gets at our basic humanity and helps us to understand that there is more, that there is so much more to life, and helps us transform our minds and helps us see things that weren't before visible. I remember as we were developing our art, we were also doing more research, and we found out that the incinerator was in a contract with the Baltimore City Public School System, along with 22 other entities. Needless to say, again, we were pretty pissed off because this is a system that we were a part of that was providing us with the education, and it was also in a deal with a project that would be harming our health. And so we reached out to students and parents and teachers from across the city, and we unified around this issue of, this incinerator violates all of our justice, that this incinerator will harm all of our health, and that it must be stopped. So we came together in this presentation in front of the school board, and we recited our poems, we spoke our speeches, and two amazing members of the group wrote this song, which we now call the Freer Voice Anthem. And it tells the tale of growing up in a place like Curtis Bay, where you're living in poverty, where you're more likely to die of lung cancer and respiratory disease, where the status quo is rooted in polluting industries that no one questions, when the mentality is this defeatist mentality of nothing will ever change. And our fight to fight against that mentality and saying that we can make a change, we can make a difference. It says, this life starts with the air that we breathe, with everyone competitive and trying to succeed, just worried about the money, not the air that we need. When you think opportunity, the eye is deceived. If the incinerator takes away a breath, how many do we need until there's nothing that's left? And the smoke clogs and we can't feel our chest, and the ones who don't catch the symptoms are considered blessed. That day was a really powerful moment because the response of the school board was a standing ovation. And you could literally see this change, this transition of this dumping ground mentality of there's nothing that we can do. We're just a school board. This is a force a lot more powerful than we are, to being what can we do to change this fate? What can we do to change our history? All that is to say is that this invisible force is very powerful. And we were successful in stopping the incinerator, but the fight is far from over. In fact, a lot of the trash that we're probably throwing away today goes right to the Bresco incinerator in Baltimore, which creates 1/3 of air pollution in the city. Needless to say, there's a lot of work that has to be done, and we have the solutions. Thank you.